Ordinance 2606.
Thank you, Madam Chair. These two applications, these next two public hearings are related, so I'm going to read both of them, but they are separate applications. The first is the county's application, which is a request that we have received to amend the future land use map element of the comprehensive plan in relation to tax parcels, and it's District 135, Map 11, parcels 3117 and 70.00 for properties containing 42.52 acres of land lying and being within Sussex County, lying on the north side of Lewis Georgetown Highway, which is Route 9, approximately 0.69 mile west of Gravel Hill Road, which is Route 30. The 911 addresses are 24212 and 24217 and 20288 Lewis Georgetown Highway, Georgetown. Specifically, this amendment request is to change the area designation to the developing area. And then the second application, which has been submitted to us by, which is separate to the county's application, is change of zone number 2063, filed by Millsborough Town Village LLC. This is an ordinance to amend the comprehensive zoning map of Sussex County from an AR1 agricultural residential district and a C1 general commercial district to an LI2 light industrial district for a certain parcel of land lying and being in Sussex County containing 42.54 acres more or less for properties lying on the north side of Lewis Georgetown Road at tax parcels, and it's District 135, Map 11, parcels 3117and 70.00. Submitted into the record for both applications. We have a copy of the ordinance number 2606 as it was introduced to County Council. We have a copy of an artesian ability to serve letter. We have copies of exhibits and materials and presentation exhibits that have been submitted to the county for both. And I would note that we have received three comments for each of those applications, which are included in your paperless packet.
Thank you, Mr. Whitehouse. All right. Mr. Dyer's up.
Madam Chair, members of the Commission, my name is Preston Dyer. I am a member of Millsborough Town Village LLC. Just to clear up any confusion that may exist, Millsborough Town Village sold property in Millsborough and was the purchaser of the property, which is the subject of this application under a tax-deferred exchange. Subsequent to that, we will be changing the name to White Oak Business Center LLC, assuming that the project proceeds with the approval. With me today is Fletcher Kenton, who is a joint venture partner with our family as a 50% interest participant. Also, our son, Mason Dyer, who's representing our Dyer family, 50% interest as well. David Hutt of Morris James is our attorney, and he will be presenting. And Mark Davidson of Pannoni will be available for any technical questions as well. Just for clarification also, we are looking at this project as a legacy project. We're trying to develop a business center. We think that there's a huge need for such a project as this, and we are intending to develop and build this project. It would be managed primarily by Fletcher Kenton and our son, Mason Dyer. So at this point, we will turn the proceeding over to David Hutt. Thank you.
Afternoon, Mr. Hutt.
Good afternoon. I was just introduced, but it feels awkward for me not to introduce myself. So I am David Hutt of Morris James, representing the applicant and owner of the property, Millsborough Town Village, LLC. First, thank you for agreeing to combine these public hearings into one public hearing that will apply to both of the applications. These applications relate to properties situated along Route 9, just a little bit east of Georgetown here, and they specifically relate to the best way to plan for the future of these properties. This application is not something that was filed without a lot of careful thought and planning, studying, evaluation, in addition to those types of analysis that occurred amongst the owners of the property, experts through the Pannoni Group, as well as others. There were meetings that occurred with Sussex County, including meetings with Andrew Harton, who's here today from Sussex County's Economic Development Office. And all of those things coalesce into the applications that you have in front of you here this afternoon. Also wanted to begin by thanking Mr. Whitehouse and his staff for accelerating the process for these applications, which I think it speaks to the importance of having industrial areas, employment-generating opportunities here in Sussex County. This afternoon, I wanted to talk about the application in three distinct ways and then summarize some proposed findings of fact for the commission to consider. I wanted to begin this afternoon by talking specifically about the comprehensive plan, then talk about the characteristics of the property itself and the surrounding area, and then talk about some of those reports and the careful analysis and calculations that were done and how this would benefit Sussex County and all of its residents. Presently, and you can see it in the left-hand image on the screen, the future land use map shows these 42 acres as being within the county's commercial area, the red area that's there. And as the commission is familiar, the commercial area is one of the county's seven growth areas. You can also see, when you look at that, that there are other areas there. As we know, colors are not my strong suit, but it's either blue or purple that you see there in two locations. That is the industrial area on the county's map. And then as you move further west, there is other growth areas that are referenced within the future land use map. Ordinance 26-06 seeks to change the designation of the area outlined that you can see there from the commercial area to the developing area. The reason for this change is to add the LI2 light industrial classification as an applicable zoning classification pursuant to Table 4.5-2 in the comprehensive plan. As the commission is familiar with, Table 4.5-2 in the comprehensive plan identifies all of the various growth areas and then has, as part of that chart, all of the applicable zoning districts for that. And the current commercial designation on the future land use maps would allow for all of the business or the B zoning classifications that begin with the letter B, as well as all of the C commercial zoning designations. But what it does not allow for is for the industrial zoning classifications, LI1, LI2, or HI1. And so as you understand, as Mr. Whitehouse just introduced the application, there's a companion application that's being considered, which is a change of zone application, seeking to change the zoning classification of the property from the split zone C1 and AR1 to the LI2 light industrial district. And so the short version of this is that the change from the commercial area to the developing area will allow, under the comprehensive plan, for that change of zone, the companion application to be able to proceed forward. Chapter 4 of the comprehensive plan is the chapter with which the Planning Commission is probably the most familiar, given its role in land use in Sussex County. And as Chapter 4 states near the outset of it, it is the most influential part of the comprehensive plan. Within Chapter 4 in Section 4.4, the plan itself provides the underlying basis for how the plan was developed. And there are seven bases for how that plan was developed. The fourth one of those is to encourage tourism and other responsible commercial and industrial job providers to locate and invest in the county. And this afternoon's application speaks directly to that basis for the future land use plan. When you move further into Chapter 4, Section 4.6 is the implementation section of the future land use plan, and it talks about how the county intends to promote commercial and industrial development, specifically Section 4.6.3, entitled Promoting Appropriate Commercial and Industrial Development, states, the future land use plan designates areas for future commercial and industrial development. It is important that commercial and industrial development occurs in a scale, intensity, and distance appropriate to adjacent residential neighborhoods. That promotion of commercial and industrial development that I just described or read the section from the comprehensive plan, is further manifested. As you know, the comprehensive plan ends each chapter with goals and objectives. And objective 4.1.3 is to promote commercial and industrial development in designated commercial office and industrial areas in a scale, intensity, distance appropriate to adjacent residential neighborhoods. In a few minutes, I'm going to describe the surrounding area and properties for the commission and proffer and make a proffer from the applicant regarding some of the surrounding neighbors. That'll address, the applicant believes, the appropriate scale, intensity, and distance to neighboring properties. But for now, what I wanted to focus on is the fact that the objective is to promote commercial and industrial development. This is already designated as commercial within the future land use map. The question in front of the commission is changing that commercial to development to allow for an industrial park that is going to be known as the White Oak Business Center. Chapter 4, the comprehensive plan, is not the only chapter which promotes commercial and industrial development. There is an economic development chapter in and of itself, which is chapter 9 in the comprehensive plan. And it also discusses the county's promotion of business parks for commercial and industrial uses. And I won't go through that whole chapter, but it does, like chapter 4, end with goals, objectives, and strategies. And goal 9.2 and several of the objectives and strategies within goal 9.2 specifically discuss rezoning, and as you'll hear in a moment, specifically discuss rezoning to LI1 and LI2 in appropriate areas. Goal 9.2 is to encourage economic diversity and expansion. And the objective within that goal, objective 9.2.2, is to identify an adequate supply of vacant, shovel-ready land for commercial and industrial uses while encouraging development that is environmentally sensitive. Within that objective 9.2.1, there are four strategies that begin that section. And I don't often read to the commission, but I thought it was important to read some of these for the understanding of the commission that these are not my words, these are not the applicant's position, these are statements from the planning or from the county comprehensive plan that helped to form the basis for the land use. Strategy 9.2.2.1 is for the county to review the zoning code and the development process to see if there are prohibitive costs to development for industrial park developers. I think one of the examples of the prohibitive costs, and it's time, which relates indirectly to cost, is the amount of time that an application would have to be in the queue in order to be heard and processed. And the county, recognizing that job creation is important, saw fit to move this application up in the process, which, again, I think speaks to the fulfillment of that strategy as part of this application. Strategy 9.2.2.2, I don't know how many twos I said, but there's three that follow the nine, is to complete the current expansion of the Delaware Coastal Business Park and identify potential areas for additional expansion. To be clear, this is not an expansion of the Delaware Coastal Business Park, but it is in fairly close proximity, and it relates to that. Again, you go down Route 9 and turn, make a left, and you can be at the Delaware Coastal Business Park in fairly short order. And when you look at the comprehensive plan, it talks about the fact that there are only four industrial or business parks in Sussex County and identifies those and indicates the need for additional areas. And again, this is near or in fairly close proximity to the Delaware Coastal Business Park. Strategy 9.2.2.3 is to explore the potential for public-private partnerships for the development of additional industrial parks within the county. This project will involve, hopefully involve, work with the Sussex County Economic Development Office, work with the state on site readiness projects. All of those things will interrelate with each other to help fulfill that strategy. And then the one that I really wanted to focus on is strategy 9.2.2.4, which states that strategy is to identify areas that are served with adequate electricity, natural gas, and fiber optic infrastructure for rezoning to LI1 and LI2 uses. And of course, that's exactly what the companion application is that the commission is considering this afternoon, as an application for rezoning to LI2 uses. A final thought on the comprehensive plan is the permitted uses that are described for the developing area. If the commission recommends that county council approve this change to the comprehensive plan and county council adopts that as ordinance 26-06, the permitted uses that the comprehensive plan describes specifically include business and industrial parks within those uses. It states that portions of the developing areas with good road access and few nearby homes should allow for business and industrial parks. Appropriate mixed-use development should also be allowed. In doing so, careful mixtures of homes with light commercial and institutional uses can be appropriate to provide for convenient services and to allow people to work close to home. Again, the industrial park business parks that are referenced there, as well as working close to home, are all strategies, objectives, and goals that are accomplished by these two applications this afternoon. Changing this area from the commercial area or designation from the commercial area to the developing area supports managed growth, infrastructure efficiency, as there's infrastructure in place, as well as community scale development. With respect to growth areas, it concentrates growth along a major corridor, Route 9. It is near existing and similar development, and we'll walk through what that is here in a moment. An application or changing this designation reduces the risk of scattered or leapfrog development, where you have something like this distant from other similar uses. And it also reinforces what a growth area is and how they're defined, rather than, again, expansion into less desirable areas and suitable locations. When you look at the 2025 strategies for state policies and spending, you can see that this area was recognized as a corridor planning area, specifically by the Office of State Planning Coordination as it was carved out. I know that Mr. Whitehouse and his staff and many others with the county have met with various state agencies over the last several months. And in fact, there was a public meeting that occurred just a couple months ago out at the CHEERS Center to discuss various portions of this Route 9 corridor. As I noted, I intentionally read those sections, not to try to put you to sleep on a Wednesday afternoon, but to make it clear that these are portions of the comprehensive plan that support the applications that are in front of the commission for its consideration. As the commission knows, I generally begin my presentations with a detailed description of the property, the surrounding area, streets, hopefully some that don't match on either side of the road, and other fun facts about the history of the property. This afternoon, again, I changed that because I wanted to start with the foundation for this application, which I think is the comprehensive plan. The property itself does consist of 42.5 acres with an existing business located on the property. That existing business is Peninsula Paving, which is operated by Fletcher Kenton, who's one of the principals of Millsboro Town Village LLC. Ms. Wingate may remember that application, and she was on the commission when that conditional use was approved, but that was conditional use 2162, approved on March 26, 2019, when County Council adopted ordinance number 2641 for a paving construction business with an office and equipment storage to be located on the property. As you know, I often find that the history of a property is a great source of fun facts about a property. And if you go back in time, and I'm not even sure if Mr. Kenton or Mr. Dyers know this, but there was another conditional use approved for this property in 1989, and that is conditional use 865, which was adopted by County Council on August 29th of 1989, for the property to be used as a campground with 290 units or campsites. Of course, there's no campground there. I know you all visit the sites. There's obviously no campground campsites that are located there, and that application is obviously long since sunsetted, but it is an interesting fact about this property. Returning to present day and these two applications, I did want to talk about what is located within 7/10 of a mile on this property in either direction from the property to help set the stage for this application. And if we can go to the state strategies map that has some various bullet points on it. Yes. If you go basically 0.7 of a mile in either direction from where Peninsula Paving is located, which is this property, if you travel east, you will come to Gravel Hill Road or Route 30. If you travel west about 0.7 of a mile, you will come to Park Avenue or Delaware Truck Route 9, as many people would know it. Returning to Peninsula Paving and traveling east as if we were headed towards Gravel Hill Road, the next business you would come to is Sequoia Landscaping Inc. I know most of everyone here, I'm sure, travels Route 9 frequently. Not only is there a Sequoia Landscaping business that's located there, but there's also what I would call a mini business complex or park immediately to the east of it with several service-oriented businesses. The very next property over is Providence Park, which is similarly situated, just with different businesses and a different mixture of commercial and industrial style uses. And that actually was the subject of a change of zone application that was approved in 2022. Change of zone 1961, which was adopted by County Council on August 9th, 2022, changing a split zoning of the property, just like with this property, from a combined C1 AR1 to the C2 medium commercial district, again, for that a little less than 8 acres. The very next property is the Weston Willows property. There are apartments that sit to the rear of the property, but in the front, there is the Weston Willows Professional Center, again, which has a business commercial feel and vibe to it. As you travel past with the Weston Willows, of course, you come to Beshe Furniture, which has the world's most unfortunate mermaid who almost never gets to be near water. As you then travel along, of course, at the intersection of Route 9 and Gravel Hill Road or Route 30, you have DelDOT's Gravel Hill Yard, which is in the southwest corner of that intersection. And if you turn south onto Gravel Hill Road, one of the first businesses you come to right before the railroad tracks is, of course, Creative Courtyards, which is a landscaping contractor yard. And in 2024, just 2 years ago, some of you were on the commission at that time and considered that application, but that was a change of zone that rezoned that property to the LI1 limited industrial district as ordinance number 3053 for change of zone 1976. So that's about 0.7 of a mile headed east from the Peninsula Paving property. If we go back to the Peninsula Paving property and travel west that same distance, again, immediately past the entrance, you would be at VS Service and Cycle, which is also Donaway's Auto Repair. The next property is M&V Tire Service. The next property is Isaac's Asphalt Paving. Then travel a short distance and you come to AP Kroll & Son. Actually, I'm sorry, you come to the Route 9 Industrial Center, which is a complex of various buildings with various commercial and industrial uses. Then you come to AP Kroll & Son, a site contractor. Immediately after that is FH Fur, which is a plumbing, HVAC, and electrical business. Across the street from FH Fur is Steiner Road. And as some of you will recall, there were properties along Steiner Road that were rezoned to HI1, heavy industrial one, which are going to be the future home of a Cheney Concrete Plant and Sun Recycling Center, where the cursor is located on the screen. If you come back off of Steiner Road and back onto Route 9 and travel west, there would be three chicken houses on your right at the intersection of Route 9 and Shingle Point Road. And then immediately south of that at the intersection with Park Avenue is Downs Automotive. And of course, if you travel just past that, you would come to the Sussex County Association of Realtor offices that exist there. I chose to describe all those uses, and you can see where they're located along Route 9, and noted that they're within 0.7 of a mile for two reasons. First, because I think it's probably the most vivid description of the character of the immediately surrounding area, and how it has organically developed in an identical manner as is proposed with these applications, which is for commercial, business, and industrial uses, several of those being sort of a mini version of that, with having little industrial or business parks already situated on some of these properties. The second reason is because both Park Avenue and Gravel Hill Road are within a mile, less than a mile, 0.7 miles from the site, and are roadways that are identified by DLDOT on its functional classification map as major collectors. Of course, as we all know, Park Avenue is also a truck route, which further supports this application. And of course, Gravel Hill Road is also known as Route 30. Both of these things confirm that businesses and industries, as well as this organic development, like to be located, and sound land planning says they should be located along major highways that connect to other major roadways. With respect to the characteristics of the property itself, the combined three tax parcel numbers meet all the height, area, and bulk requirements found in section 115-107 of the zoning code. Those minimum lot size requirements are 1 acre of total area, 150 feet of width, and 200 feet of depth, which are all, of course, greatly exceeded by the geographical dimensions of this property. The property is not within a floodplain, as is within Zone X on the flood maps, which means it's outside the 500-year floodplain. There are no jurisdictional wetlands on the property requiring an Army Corps of Engineer permit, as that was confirmed by an approved jurisdictional determination as part of the Peninsula paving application previously, and those materials are within the record that Mr. Whitehouse introduced for the commission. The property is not located within any source water protection areas that are described in Chapter 89 of the code, meaning that there are no wellhead protection areas, and this is not an excellent groundwater recharge area. Artesian has the CPCN for both central water and sewer for these properties. And again, when Mr. Whitehouse introduced the application, he confirmed that there is a willing and able letter from Artesian confirming that Artesian Water Company, Inc. Can provide public water, including fire protection for the property, and Artesian Wastewater Management, Inc. Can collect, treat, and dispose of the sanitary waste from the site. DP&L provides electric service to the site, and there are other utilities that are available as they exist right along Route 9. We've all seen the construction as these utilities are installed, but those include natural gas through Chesapeake, Verizon, and Comcast. With respect to the surrounding properties, when I went through and described all of those what was in the surrounding area, of course, I focused what was immediately adjacent to those roadways, for instance, along the Route 9 corridor or Gravel Hill Road or Steiner Road. This area of Route 9 is one of the original commercial zoning areas in Sussex County, where when the original and first zoning maps were set up, the county planners at that time would take 600 feet of area, generally speaking, on either side of a roadway, and identify that as commercial, and then the areas behind that would be AR1 or agricultural residential lands. This area is one of those areas, as I mentioned. The line that you see parallel to Route 9 is 600 feet from the right-of-way, and that is why the first 600 feet of all of these properties, except the ones that have been rezoned over time, are zoned C1 General Commercial District. As you can see, the properties that are behind them are zoned AR1, and there are other zoning classifications, the LI2 and the C2 that you can see, which extend past that 600-foot mark. And actually, the C1 does when you get down to the Weston Willows area, and then on the south side of Route 9, you can see there's actually a CR1 area as well as the HI1 area that I described previously. When we look at the neighboring properties at the rear of this site in the areas that are zoned AR1, there are portions of an approved cluster subdivision known as Azalea Woods that are adjacent to the rear of the property. If we can go to the next slide. Thank you. You can again see along Route 9, which now runs top to bottom on the screen, the C1 area, the first 600 feet, and then you can see the AR1 grounds that exist behind it. And starting where the cursor is located and going, if we can move a little bit to the left, starting there, that is Azalea Woods, and it goes from there all the way around to the other side. You can see that the future lots, that those are future phases of Azalea Woods, are shown on the screen. Azalea Woods was approved by the Planning Commission. I think, Ms. Wingate, you were also there for that approval. On December 19th of 2019, as subdivision 2019-8, and it was approved with conditions A through U. When all of the analysis and studying was being done on this property, one of the concerns was the best way to ensure compatibility and transition from proposed light industrial uses to residential uses, the approved Azalea Woods subdivision. The result of those studies and evaluations, many of them are in the record materials that you have, but the basic result of that analysis was that the most effective means of providing something that included both a physical separation, a visual screen, as well as natural sound attenuation, was to leave a wider perimeter buffer of existing woods around those portions of the property than the code would require, just as standard or ordinary setbacks. And you can see that this is represented on the screen. They are, and I think the next slide may even show it a little better in a little more detail. The applicant directed me to prepare a restrictive covenant to create specifically restricted areas on the property adjacent to the future portions of Azalea Woods. There would be a 100-foot restricted area. And then on the side that is not adjacent to Azalea Woods, where the cursor is presently located, there would be a 50-foot restricted area on that boundary to the east. By the terms of the restrictive covenant, and a draft of that restrictive covenant was in the project book materials, the restrictive covenant would be enforceable by Sussex County. And I know that Mr. Robertson routinely tells you that the county does not enforce private restrictive covenants, but we still wanted to leave the option for the county to have that right to enforce it if there was a violation, recognizing that change of zone applications cannot have conditions on them. This is a means for the county to have an enforcement tool at its availability. The other group that can enforce this, and it's specifically identified in the draft covenant, is all of the adjacent properties. They're identified by tax parcel number as parties with specific enforcement rights for that restrictive covenant. The restrictive covenant states that it would be recorded within 10 days of a decision from County Council approving the change of zone classification to the LI2 Light Industrial District, and would exist so long as the property had that LI2 Light Industrial zoning classification. When you look at the images on the screen, and I'm beginning to think that Mr. Davidson creates colors that are close to each other just so I can't distinguish them. But
well done.
I see there are no friends here. For the area, the 100-foot restricted area, which is adjacent to Azalea Woods, you can see that there is a green color, and then what I think is a brown or tan color. The green color would be 75 feet of undisturbed woods. So the existing, I'm sure you all visited the site, you saw that it's a wooded parcel. The woods in that 75-foot area would all remain completely undisturbed as they are. And then the 25-foot, the other color that's shown for that 100 feet, would only be able to be used for two things. One is the location of utilities, and two is for some sort of stormwater management, a swale or pond or something of that nature. Creating a 100-foot restricted area where there would be no industrial uses adjacent to as the Azalea Woods community. On the eastern side of the property that you see there, what's proposed there is a 50-foot restricted area, and 50 feet of woods along that property boundary line would remain in their undisturbed wooded condition. At the very outset, I talked about the careful analysis and consideration that went into the preparation for this application. And in the materials that are in the record, and I've referenced it a couple times, there's a number of reports that talk about the outcome of those studies and the analysis that were prepared by various professionals. Those reports include a planning and compatibility analysis, a sound attenuation evaluation, a cost-benefit analysis, as well as soils and stormwater analysis. And each of those goes into exactly how this property was studied and evaluated, resulting in the applications you see in front of you. The first of those, if we can go back to the one where the compatibility, one of the questions that the applicant wanted to answer first was, with the designation of commercial on the future land use map, what are the available classifications? And of course, one of those is the C3 zoning classification, which most closely matches the existing C1 that exists for the first portion of the property. When you look at the setbacks that would be required, they are shown, and I think it's in red, on the map that you see, and you can see that what would be under the future land use map, it indicates this should be a commercial. If this is rezoned to C3, all of those setbacks would be much closer to the property boundaries than what is proposed in the restrictive covenant that is proposed as part of the application here this afternoon. It's also important to remember that not only would there be this restricted area of 100 feet along the Azalea Woods boundary, but during the studying of this property, of course, we looked at all the various surrounding properties and their approvals, and specifically, of course, the cluster subdivision approval for Azalea Woods. And condition F of that approval requires Azalea Woods to have a 30-foot wooded landscape buffer along all of its property boundaries, and also has a 50-foot separation from all property boundaries to the beginning of lots within that community. What this means for this project is that between the requirements for Azalea Woods and the proposed restrictive covenant here this afternoon that's being proffered, there would be a 100-foot separation between any type of industrial use in the future and the lot lines for future homes in Azalea Woods. So that was one of the compatibility considerations. The other, moving to the next slide, and the next one after that.
You're on that though, with the setbacks though, with C3, that would be 30 feet from residential use by code. I mean, the LI2 is just side yards, 20 feet, you know? So isn't C3, because you're counting in the restricted covenant that you're talking about, which is voluntary, not what the code says. So you're sort of making it sound like this is better than C3, when really C3 would have a bigger setback than LI2 would, I think.
No, I don't think those setbacks are right, but irrespective of that, with the restrictive covenant, it's going to far exceed that.
Right, right.
And so with the industrial uses that are those light industrial uses, those would be more distant than if there was just a commercial rezoning. And we had on that slide all of the setbacks all compared, one to the other as far as side yards and
right.
All that.
Right. I mean, it just seems like you're taking the voluntary, and I understand the voluntary setback, but you're adding that into the equation instead of just looking at what the setbacks would be from LI2 to C3 or C2 or whatever. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Understood. And that is the comparison, thank you, Mr. Davidson, directly between the arrows that are drawn there shown the direct setbacks as they relate to each other between the C3 and the LI2.
Okay.
Moving forward to the, again, this is more of the planned land use compatibility. And then if we can go to the traffic. I misspoke. Can you go back to Mark? Yep, one more. There you go. With respect to compatibility with the adjacent land that you see here, DelDOT would identify Route 9 as an other principal arterial, DLDOT defines that as highways in rural and urban areas which provide access between an arterial and a major port, airport, public transportation facility, or other intermodal transportation facility. Sussex County's code itself, section 115-4, describes the Lewis-Georgetown Highway, or U.S. Route 9, as a major arterial roadway. Again, so clearly this property is situated along a major arterial roadway as defined by DLDOT and the county. And the best evidence of that, of course, is the fact that this area already supports a number of employment-generating businesses and uses along this roadway, with the description of all the businesses that I mentioned previously. On the next slide that talks about the sound attenuation, there is a sound attenuation report that is in the project materials regarding the wooded buffer that's in the proposed restrictive covenant that adds that 75 feet that does a number of things, including acting as natural sound attenuation for the project. Of course, as is typical of these applications, there was a service level evaluation request that was filed with DLDOT. DLDOT's response to the service level evaluation request was that there would not be a need for a traffic impact study at this time until the specific uses of the property are known and as plans would come forward in the future to the county. One of the important developments since this project was planned, of course, is House Bill 450, the Road Delaware Act, which the governor signed in July, I believe. What we now know from that act is that there is a threshold number of trips for when a traffic impact study is required, which is 500 peak hour trips. And if that is met, then there would be a traffic impact study. If that is not met, then the developer ends up paying what I'll call an impact fee, which is all being determined right now through the various agency reviews of House Bill 450. The site itself has a number of existing approvals. That's why some of this information can be so well known about the property. For instance, even just this past month, the Planning Commission saw a revised site plan for this property. On the screen, you can see excerpts from the Sussex Conservation District, the Office of the State Fire Marshal, the Army Corps of Engineers. So this property has already been for Peninsula Paving through a number of approvals that it has. In addition to that, and along this corridor, there is a new redevelopment that's about to occur, and that is for Delray Foundations, which is about to redevelop the property that's immediately in front of this property or between this property and Route 9. And that is going to be redeveloped as a contractor office and storage yard. And in fact, the principal of Delray Foundations, Reynald Garcia, is here this afternoon. As part of all of the work that's been done out there and as part of these applications, there was a number of stormwater management soils, infiltration feasibility analysis that were undertaken. It's actually probably one of the longest parts of the project record. And even though it's the longest part, that's all I'm going to say about it, because all that information and data is in the project book. A moment ago, we talked about the 75-foot wide forested buffer and talked about the community benefits that it provides, the physical separation, the visual barrier, as well as the sound attenuation. But of course, the 70-foot wide strip of forested buffer provides a number of other benefits. Those benefits include ecological benefits, creating corridors, particularly when you take that and then add it to the landscape and wooded buffer from Azalea Woods. Trees, particularly of that width, will improve air quality. They improve stormwater management. They are BMP under DENREC's and EPA's green infrastructure regulations. And of course, I think everyone recognizes that not newly planting a buffer, but having an existing buffer of trees is just a far superior thing than having to go out and try to create a new landscape buffer. In addition to all of those land planning specific benefits, there are a number of studies that were done about the public and economic benefits. What is projected for this site is that there would be approximately 14 shovel-ready sites that could hold up to about 320,000 square feet of vertical construction. Now, the objective would be to create between 100 to 150 permanent full-time positions for those businesses that would be located in the White Oak Business Center. The annual payroll, as you can see, it's shown there, it would be between $5.5 million and $11.25 million. And all of this, of course, would increase the tax value, permit and inspection revenue, and utility investments. And doing all of that for the property without, of course, increasing any enrollment in public schools, because these would be employment centers and not places for people to reside. One other thing to bear in mind is that all of these things, of course, would be subject to future site plans that would come in front of the Planning Commission as the site and all the various individual components within that site were developed. There would be a lot of agency review and the site plan review approval process, of course, that the Planning Commission has. A White Oak Business Park, this concept, these applications were presented to CDAC, which supported the application. That is one of the letters of support that Mr. Whitehouse referenced at the outset. And one of the keys is that the White Oak Business Park matches the mission of the CDAC organization, which is to create sustainable economic prosperity in Sussex County. Also within the project materials, there was a number of letters of support beyond just the three that Mr. Whitehouse referenced, as they were included within the project materials. And some of those are from, or most of them, if not all of them, are from immediately adjacent neighbors. For instance, one is from Hal Dukes, who owns the Route 9 Industrial Center, two properties down from this. Another is from AP Kroll and Sons. Another is from Mr. Ayub, who owns the property immediately to the west of this property. And I'm going to do this for Mr. Garcia, although he is welcome to come up and say whatever he wants. But Mr. Garcia, who's here in the room, also has a letter of support. For the project that will now be made part of the record. At this time, I'm going to hand the proposed findings of fact for both applications, for both ordinance 26-06 as well as change of zone application 2063 to Mr. Whitehouse. As those are, I think, making their way over to Ms. Lepore, I think she has them. And so I can continue to break with my usual traditions on things when I present. One thing I don't typically do is review the findings of fact. I often will review specific conditions that may be unique to a project, but I don't generally talk about the findings of fact. And I'm not going to go through and review, don't worry, I'm not gonna go through and review all those findings of fact here this afternoon. But one.
Yeah, we're going into recess. We'll readjourn in 2 weeks.
I'm gonna play that chair card and make you hush up.
The one thing I did want to note was that all of the various provisions, particularly for Ordinance 26-06, all the various sections of the comprehensive plan that I mentioned and read from, those are included within the findings of fact. In addition, all of the other reference, or all of the other information that you would find in the findings that are proposed here for the Planning Commission to consider. There's documents or supporting data within the project material for each one of those items, and they correspond to things that are within the record, generally speaking, the written record that is already part of this file. These applications seek to create shovel-ready land for commercial and industrial uses along Route 9 in an area with existing mixture of commercial, industrial, and business uses. With respect to Ordinance 26-06, as I mentioned at the outset, the question is not, should this be in a growth area? It already is in a growth area. The question this afternoon is it appropriate for it to be in a developing area which would allow for the LI2 light industrial district zoning classification? And I would point the Planning Commission back to strategy 9.2.2.4, which is that strategy is to identify areas that are served with adequate electricity, natural gas, and fiber optic infrastructure for rezoning to LI1 and LI2 uses. That is a description of this area. It is an area that's served with electricity, natural gas, has fiber optic, again, along Route 9 and through Comcast and Verizon, those things are available. With respect to the requested amendment to the zoning map to change the split designation from C1 and AR1 to the singular LI2 light industrial district, this change would allow for uses that are similar to and certainly within the character of the existing uses in this area. As we discussed all the various uses that are within 0.7 mile, whether you go east or west of this site. The zoning code defines the purpose of the LI2 district as providing for a variety of light manufacturing, fabricating, processing, wholesale distributing, and warehousing uses appropriately located for access by major thoroughfares. That is the bottom line objective of these two applications. And we would ask the Planning Commission to recommend approval of both Ordinance 26-06 and Change of Zone Application 2063 to County Council. That concludes our presentation. If there are any questions for me, any of the owners, as well as Mr. Davidson, we'd be happy to try to answer those for the commissioner staff.
All right, we thank you, Mr. Hutt. And we will start with Mr. Passwaters.
No, I think it was a very very well presented presentation. I appreciate it, but I don't have any questions at this time.
Okay, Mr. Allen?
No, this time.
Mr. Collins?
Thank you for a very thorough, as usual, presentation. And of course, you have friends here. I do have one question. Do you have any prospective businesses that have expressed interest in this park? And what might be an example of what one of those would be? If you don't, the answer is no.
No, I'll ask Mr.
Pure speculation.
No, presently, we do not.
Okay. Thank you. The next question for the record, this zoning change would not, by right, permit the build out of a data center, for example, right?
Question. So. LI2 allows everything in LI1, and LI2 also allows all the business and commercial uses allowed in the commercial zoning districts. Data center isn't defined in Chapter 115 yet, although that would be comp plan priority following the comp plan. Research centers are allowed in LI2, but I would express the view today that a research center is not a data center. And that a data center is more industrial, more complex. But a research center would be permitted to answer your question in LI2. So.
Okay. And for the record, there's no intent for a data center to occupy any part of this park, as far as we know, correct?
That is correct. I'll ask the owner to confirm.
Our understanding is there's not sufficient electrical capacity to practically support that type of an operation.
Thank you so much. I have no other questions. Thank you again.
I would note, Mr. Collins, I was equally as intrigued by you as Mr. Whitehouse's answer to the data center question. So thank you, Mr. Whitehouse.
Mr. Pettyjohn?
I have no questions.
Okay, I don't have one either. I would like to just point out one of the comments in favor was from Mr. Dyer himself, so we probably shouldn't consider that. Just saying.
Can I ask a question, Madam Chair? Just because this is going to come up, but I just, you know, I'd like you to get it in the record a little better. Because, you know, it strikes me that we're going through the process of amending our comp plan to the development area to allow LI2, which is, everybody in this room knows, is an extra step. We've got to deal with off-state planning coordination and all that happy stuff. When I look at C2 and C3, you know, it allows distribution centers, warehouses, major repairs, wholesale, which is similar to what you all are looking to do, I think, maybe not exactly. And, you know, and you said what you're looking to do is also similar to the existing units, uses in the area. Why was the reason for going LI2 and having to change the comp plan versus the much more straight line path into the existing commercial area designation that keeps the comp plan the same? You know, that was a big, long question, but it would be helpful to get that in the record now and also for County Council.
Sure, it's a long question. I think it's a short answer.
Fair.
And that is that when you look at the uses that are permitted within the LI2 district, as Mr. Whitehouse noted, one of the uses partway down the page is all uses in the LI1 district. And that would be a much more expansive list of permitted uses than, for instance, the C2 medium commercial district, which has, you know, a much more limited set of those things. And I would also say, I guess in addition to that, is C2 zoning classification would, there is one of those that was done, as I mentioned, a couple years earlier. C2 always bumps into enforcement questions, and I'm not picking on that property, I'm actually thinking of a different property, with how it is being used. And you solve a lot of those questions by having the appropriate zoning designation from the outset, and with the goal and objective being to create shovel-ready sites that a person who wants to bring their business to that area can know that all they need to do, I say all, but they just need to put together that site plan and build their building, versus having to go through the process of either getting a conditional use or changing something about that designation. That was the thought process behind that, because certainly having a commercial designation on the future land use map is a very meaningful thing. It's certainly a very powerful growth area, but with the growth area, the developing area growth area, you then have the ability to have the LI1, LI2s, and the other industrial classifications.
So you're kind of almost looking at it the same way as, because somebody might say, well, why don't you just do a conditional use, you know, but then you're locked into the conditional use. It's almost the same as saying if we're C2 or C3, we're locked into those things, whereas the LI2, which brings in LI1, gives us more flexibility and more shovel-ready.
That is correct. When those applications, the shovel-ready applications and such, go forward, with that broader range, you will capture many more, the ability for more employers to be located within this future park.
Just before, Jamie, on, because you brought up something, is the idea to do pad sites or, you know, condominiumize it or subdivide it at some point? That's neither here nor there, but I just don't know if you've thought about that.
I know Mr. Dyer has thought about that. We've had discussions about it, and Mr. Dyer, you're welcome to tell Mr. Robertson your thoughts, but it is, you are on the same.
I mean, I guess, is there going to be a site plan at some point for the whole site, you know, that shows pad sites, or is it going to be a bunch of one-off site plans?
There is a preliminary site plan, but the concept would be to do a condominium overlay regime so as to avoid, we never guess correctly up front. So we would try to ascertain that at that time with a condominium overlay to avoid major subdivision, unless it were required by the tenant or the user, in which case we would go through either a minor or a major at that point.
Sorry, Mr. Whitehouse.
If I were to provide just a little more color and context, you saw the slide, and I referenced it, that one of the thought is that this could be up to 14 sites. So that somewhat maybe answers, speaks to your question. When Mr. Dyer referenced the plan that he's referencing has 14 of those sites that would be, you know, individual for separate businesses or whatnot.
Yeah. Now, and I'm just thinking about how, if this gets approved, how, and it's got it, like I said, it's got through the comp plan, off state planning coordination, county council, and also the rezoning, but like whether Jamie's staff is going to be dealing with one large site plan and it's premature at this point, or 14 individual site plans, you know, for you know, the separate owners.
If I can, Madam Chair, just to follow up on that question, it's more of a curiosity and understanding the nature of the use, and it goes to compatibility in terms of LI1 and LI2. So the difference between those two zoning districts is essentially LI1 is very limited in terms of activities are directed to inside buildings with no processing of raw materials. That's pretty much the fundamental difference between LI1 and LI2. much smaller, much more compact, much more contained with less of an impact. That's LI1. And then LI2 allows the raw materials to be processed. And this goes to compatibility type question, given that we have an adjoining residential development. And I guess my question is there specific uses on the LI2 list that involve raw processing of materials outside of buildings that are desirable here, as opposed to all the stuff inside the buildings that are permitted in LI1? And the reason I ask it is that LI1 specifically talks about the purpose of LI1, which is for an industrial park, and where activities are inside the buildings. The key difference between the two is the processing of raw materials. So.
And what one of the concerns, I'm going to try to answer your question as directly as I can, but one of your concerns is that Peninsula Paving exists there presently, and Peninsula Paving probably doesn't fit an LI1 description. I guess I'll put on the record, it doesn't fit the description for an LI1 zoning classification. And so LI1 sort of got taken off the table at that point. And so that's pretty much the primary reason why you don't see an LI1 application. I know, as I mentioned when I was describing all the adjacent properties, there was just one on Gravel Hill Road, a similar circumstance. But because of how the property already is being used, LI1 didn't fit the bill, for lack of a better term.
I do have a question, and Mr. Whitehouse, you might be helpful with this, as you were with just that description of LI1 versus LI2. Speaking of raw materials to be processed, with LI2 coming through there, is that something that, for all intents and purposes, we could have like something that's processing raw steel with a 100-ton punch press that's bang, bang, bang all day, all night?
So the difference between LI2 and heavy industrial, HI1 use, all those heavy industrial uses are pretty much controlled, depending on scale. There is some metal processing that is allowed in LI2, but that kind of industrial plant would not be permitted, like a foundry. Okay. Or processing of creating I-beams, for example, you can't do that in.
So no, not a forge, not any kind of high pressure forge that's making a loud. And the only reason I say that, I realize that part of that plan is shown in the existence of that Azalea Woods on the back side. It doesn't exist yet, but it would potentially be coming, right?
You can do some materials testing in LI2, like you can do a laboratory, provided you're not creating jet engines or anything like that.
Right.
You can create a laboratory for steel and metallurgical science purposes, but you can't have a full-blown industrial foundry. So.
And you all don't see, HI, we had that one, but it's been a while. But just like Mr. Whitehouse says, those are all more HI1 heavy industrial uses, and even in HI1, for the types of things that talk about additional things like fire, explosion, noise, vibration, dust, or emission of smoke order, odor, toxic gases, or other pollutants, there's even another level of public hearing you got to go to the Board of Adjustment for. So there's protections in the zoning classification here because they're not applying for HI1, and even if they were in HI1, which they're not, but just sort of for educational sake, there's still another layer that you have to go through for an additional public hearing before you can even do that stuff.
Thank you. I wasn't sure of what classified what and what stopped or what started. And I mean, believe me, I'm in favor of businesses altogether, but I just want to make sure that we're fair to the surrounding properties as well.
One thing that I think may set your mind a little bit more at ease, Mr. Pettijohn, is the actual language of the code itself. Section 115-102 is the permitted uses for the LI2 district. And it states, again, sorry to read, but it is code language. A building or land shall be used for the following purposes consisting of general light industrial warehousing and storage uses, including certain open or enclosed storage of products, materials, and vehicles, and including the following uses and any similar uses which are not likely to create any more offensive noise, vibration, dust, heat, smoke, odor, glare, or other objectionable influences than the minimum amount normally resulting from other uses listed. And then there's the whole big laundry list of uses. But here's, it talks about such listed uses being generally wholesale establishments, service industries, and light industries that manufacture, process, store, and distribute goods and materials and are, in general, dependent on raw materials refined elsewhere and manufacture, compounding, processing, packaging, or treatment as specified of the following products, and that's the big laundry list. But there is a clear differentiation between the heavy industrial type activities and those light industrial activities. And some of it ends up being, as I understand it, a judgment call by Mr. Whitehouse and his office as to what is generally related to a list in the code that's more than, I mean, it's 2.5, almost 3 pages long of those uses. And then Mr. Whitehouse and his office look to see if it's similar to one of those light industrial uses. And if it's not, then that's the process that Mr. Robertson was just describing, where you end up at the Board of Adjustment with the public hearing on whether or not that use fits into the light industrial category or is something other than that.
That's great. Thank you. Thank you for your help with that.
All right. Thank you. Anyone else have any questions? No? All right. There being none, if you'd like to have a seat, we'll see if anyone has an interest in your application. Is there anyone here that would like to speak in favor of either one of these applications, Ordinance 2606 or Change of Zone Number 2063, Millsboro Town Village? In favor? Is there anyone here would like to speak in opposition? I didn't understand what he said. Oh, thank you. Okay. All right. Any further questions? Okay. What's your pleasure?
Madam Chair, I make a motion we defer until we get additional information.
But we have to do them separately. So.
Oh, I guess for yep. Both of them. Okay.
Yes. Thank you.
Defer Ordinance 26-06. I make a motion also to defer the change of zone 2063 Millsboro Town Village LLC.
Well,
we got to do
each one separately.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, we got to vote on one.
Even though we had the hearings combined, we got to act on them separately. So.
Okay. So, Madam Chair, I make a motion to defer Ordinance 26-06 for further consideration.
Second.
Thank you. Motion has been made and seconded to defer action on Ordinance 2606. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Motion carries. Next on up, change of zone.
Madam Chair, I make a motion we defer the change of zone 2063 Millsboro Town Village LLC for further consideration.
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded to defer action on change of zone number 2063 Millsboro Town Village LLC. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Motion carries. All right, thank you very much. Next on-